time for another edition of Ride at Home, brought home to you by University of Iowa Community Credit Union, your community, your credit union, to the lilting sounds of Handel's Water Music. I had you confused there, buddy.
You know, I'm just not that, like, classically savvy, I have to admit.
Yeah. Local realtor, bon vivant, mad about town, and not classical music fan, Matt Cargiolotti.
I like it, but I mean, it's like, it's beautiful and lovely and performed and all of that, but I mean, I don't spend that much time in the elevator, you know?
Oh, okay, well, see there, lots of dentists.
We have a shortage of them, so yeah. There's only like, what, maybe a dozen here, so.
There you go.
Right. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Matt. Awesome. Why are we doing water music here today?
I don't know. You made the choice. I wanted to talk about basement water intrusion and some general kind of water intrusion preparation right now.
Because it's that most wonderful time of the year.
It's the beginning of it. And quite frankly, if you have a basement or even a crawl space with a history of any kind of water intrusion, this is a time when you can start preventing it. So one of the things that I think is always a good idea is, you know, really try to take a quick look around, make sure that like your downspouts are put back on. If you took them off for the winter, get them back on, get that water away from the house. If your gutters aren't clean, clean them. I mean, that's like two huge ones right there that contribute to like thousands and thousands of dollars of damage to homes. Really, really important. One of the things that you can always consider too as you're working with that water is, once you have some water damage, are you supposed to disclose it? So when you're filling out your seller's disclosure, when you're getting ready to list your house, and if you didn't get that downspout extension put back on, or you didn't get those gutters cleaned out, maybe you just needed to like kind of tarp something off or clean something up or whatever.
Well, okay, let's do a for instance here.
Sure. All right.
What was it, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago, 5 years ago? The, was it Labor Day floods, Memorial Day floods?
2013.
Yeah, 2013. Okay, water backing up into the basement.
Right.
It was a mess. Multiple. I lost a lot of stuff. Cleaned up everything. We got it all cleaned up and fixed up. Do I have to disclose that?
Well, anything that's considered to be a material adverse defect that is not discoverable through the results of a normal home inspection. So the answer is yes.
But there's no defect because everything is fixed.
That's
good.
That's the fascinating part. So the way it's written for Iowa's disclosures is, it's whatever would be considered a material adverse defect, which means it's not necessarily up to you to decide what that is. It's up to your buyer. So another material adverse defect in some states, in Iowa, this is not the case. In Iowa, it is the case, actually. There's other states in which it's not. A ghost. Do you have a ghost in your house?
Maybe I do, and maybe I don't.
Right.
And bats? Bats in my belfry?
Yeah, that's another one. But no, that's, you know, would a home inspector be able to discover that there's been a history of supernatural whatever in your house? I mean, in your house, maybe, right?
But. Yeah. There's a lot of weird stuff goes on in my house.
God.
Can't be explained.
Wow. So, but no, I mean, but that's one of those things where it may not be a material adverse defect to you. It probably won't be to most people or to your real estate agents or to your lender or an attorney or an appraiser or anybody who's involved in a transaction. However, there may be one buyer that is. And to them, it would be. So the answer is, when in doubt, disclose.
Okay.
When in doubt, write it down. Keep a good kind of history of your property anyway. One of the things actually I think is really important when I go to list a property, especially if the current owner has made time after time of improvement to the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, well, I did this, or hey, we did that. And, you know, not just some general maintenance, but some real improvement. General maintenance, something that's important that we all need to do anyway. But if you're actually improving it, updating it, adding on to it, whatever the case may be, major maintenance, like roof, you know, or furnace, AC, those are all things that I would say it's good just to kind of keep you know, keep like an open spreadsheet or like a list. Just say like, yeah, October of 2013, yeah, we put a new furnace in, and then the air conditioner went out, so we put a new air conditioner in November. You know, probably an unlikely time of year, but still. I mean, and they kind of keep going down the list like that. If it's one of those things that can make a huge difference, just to kind of have this chronology, right? This history of the ownership of that, of the owner's experience of that property and what they've done to it. It also shows you, too, what that owner values about it, if that makes sense, right? So it's like, wow, no, there's some pride here. Look at this. You know, they did a great job with this. There's a, there's extra responsibility that this person, or like a particular responsibility this person's really, really paid really close attention to making sure these things are done and completed. And they remember them. And they're showing it to us, which is great. And so that buyer, as they're making that those choices, they can see that. And so, I mean, yeah, 2013, major water event. I mean, the whole community kind of had that. Pretty much every real estate agent's going to be versed on how to kind of discuss that with their buyers as they're reading those seller's disclosures. And I think that's actually an important thing to mention, especially if there are corrective steps ever taken. So, for example, like sump pump installed or basement waterproof system installed or... new gutters installed, or gutters installed at all if it doesn't have any, you know, and so or the water drained away, or the grade, so where the soil contacts the foundation wall outside of the house and how it's now been brought up, and so the water runs away from the house rather than pooling up against alongside of it, right? And those are really important things to kind of talk about. But water is one of those things which is like, you know, we all need it to live, and man, when we have too much of it, it's bad. Is so bad.
Yeah. Absolutely. Have you ever had to wade through your basement?
Yeah, I have. And if you do have a history of some water intrusion and you're in a contemporary home, not like a 1900s or pre-1900s house, and it's like a real usable basement, I do think, I mean, all basements should have this disclosed anyway, but if there's something that is like usable as living space or finished as living space, and you have had a water intrusion event, make sure it's been corrected. If you're trying to correct it, if you're trying to stop it, do what you can to make sure that it's been done. So keep an eye on it. If you have a sump pump, well, I mean, if it has it been running for the last 5 years and that's been working okay, yeah, maybe you should call a plumber. I know it sounds crazy, but seriously, have them take a look at it and make sure that pump is going to be okay for the year. Or if you got any travel coming up, I mean, and your house is going to be empty, especially in spring for a week or a few days or anything, you may really want to make sure you have a backup system. Because that way, if the power goes out, you're not running downstairs with a bucket like you would be if you're home normally. But, I mean, at least your backup pump is going to be working. And there's a couple of different backup pumps that are actually that are out there that are available. I'm sure there's several, but the two that are the most common are a battery backup, and then the other one is actually a water pressure backup. A battery backup pump actually has a battery or sometimes two batteries and like a big deep cell car battery kind of looking thing, and it'll actually spin that pump when the water passes the normal pump. And so if the power is off and your normal pump's in the on position but there's no power to run it, then as the water gets higher, it hits the second pump. That second pump turns on and pumps it back out, right? Now, those battery backups are great, but they're good for, you know, less than a day. They're not going to run very long. And so hopefully your power comes back on soon. If you get a down power line or something like that, it's not going to last very long. You're not going to have a lot of time. But at least it's something, right? Usually when our power's off, it's not off very long. And then there's a water pressure backup pump. Water pressure backup actually uses, the water pressure from the city's water supply as it runs into your house. And it'll actually run through, there's a funny little thing you can do with that, but it actually runs an impeller that's pressurized. And that impeller spins from the pressure of the water, and that actually spins a shaft, which spins a pump, right? And so even if your power's off, you have this water pressure pump that's going to work no matter what. They're fantastic. They're worth every penny. They're usually pretty expensive. They're about $1,000 installed. I think it's the last time I had one. I had a client ask for one. But I mean, they always work, right? Power's off? Fine. It's working. You know, make sure you pay your water bill. But that's the other thing too. Now, so since the water that's discharged from that, if you have a sprinkler system on your property, there's not many here that do, but no. There are some. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you're allowed to do is put in a separate water beater, because that way you're only going to be paying for the water that's, you know, separately, that's going in and using for your normal house and then down the city sewer. So for a sump pump, it can't discharge into the city sanitary sewer, which also means that the water that you're using to spin in your pump, if you have a water backup, could also be put on a separate meter. And so that way you're not paying for that wastewater treatment at that same time. And that water's, you know, quite a bit more affordable if you're not paying for that wastewater treatment. So if you do have a sprinkler system of some sort, I highly recommend this even more, because it actually becomes a much more affordable thing. Because the water pressure pumps as much money as they save you, which is significant. And I would say use them primarily only as a backup. But they can also, you know, I mean, you're dumping pennies down the drain when your faucet's running, right?
Right.
So same kind of thing. So make sure you take a look at your pumps. They're always super important. I mean, have them take a look at by a professional. If you're savvy and you know what you're doing, great. If your house is going to be for sale, maybe have a pro look anyway. I think it's a good idea. The other thing that's really important with a lot of sump pumps, especially if it's one that wasn't installed professionally, is making sure that it actually has some form of ground fault interruption. And so otherwise, potentially, if that pump should overheat, you could have a fire in your hand, or if that circuit should overload. Always a good idea to make sure, especially on a sump pump, make sure you have the ground fault protection. If you're not quite sure, you know, how to get that or what to do, call an electrician. You know, they're plentiful. And actually, the one I talked to yesterday, they're actually not too busy right now either. So really good time to reach out to some of those folks while we're kind of in between these stages of the seasons. Now, if you have a history of water intrusion that hasn't been mitigated, you're considering listing your house to get it for sale, or whatever, yes, get it looked at. Absolutely. I will never say not. And there's several basement companies out there. There's like Dry Basement Iowa. There's like Midwest Basement Systems. There's some wall anchor systems to Standard Water out of the Twin Cities, actually. They'll even come down here to do work, I've seen. And that's a really important thing to kind of make sure you check out these different systems. Read the reviews. Talk to your neighbors, too, to see who they've used or see what if they've had problems. Usually, the houses, if you have water in your basement, usually the houses around you do, too. And so it's usually a reflection of terrain, the quality of material to build those foundations, and the soil composure is a huge difference. And so, you know, whether or not there's actually, you know, a lot of liquefaction, if there's a lot of subterranean soil that's actually kind of plasticizing and creating hydraulic pressure that's pushing that water kind of through the little tiny fissures and whatnot of your foundation walls or even the edge of your foundation and up along the seam of the floor. I mean, all of those things, I mean, where it's at is usually indicative of everybody else's kind of problem at that same time. So, I mean, sometimes it's important to talk to your neighbors too. Ask them what they've done. See who they've used. Talk to them about process. Talk to them about how they paid for it, or, you know, was there any money available for it? Was there a rebate available for it? You know, did it save them anything on their home insurance? I mean, there's a lot of good questions to ask. And for that, quite frankly, I'd usually stick with your surrounding homes. Ask those folks, see what they've done. I think that's a really good place to start for that. The last piece for the roof, I think, which is really, really important, is make sure you get your gutters cleaned. This is the time of year where there's a lot of old leaves and they're just kind of like plugged up and they're sticky and gooey. They're not, you know, they're not brittle. They're not, they're just, they're going to sit there and plug up a downspout right away. And as that water overflows a gutter, it can do an incredible amount of damage to a house. So, yeah. All
right. You're Right at Home with Matt Cargiolotti. We'll take a look at some numbers when we return. This is Right at Home brought to you by University of Iowa Community Credit Union. Your community, your credit union.
University of Iowa Community Credit Union is the number one mortgage lender in Iowa. That's because they offer low rates, no 1% origination fee, and 100% financing. For residents living in Grinnell and the surrounding areas, they also have a local mortgage expert right in Grinnell. Aaron Black has 17 years of mortgage experience and is ready to serve you from their office at 705 6th Avenue in downtown Grinnell. Contact Aaron at 236-1801 or online at uiccumortgage.com to get started with your purchase and refinance mortgage loan. UICCU is an equal housing lender.
Time for that most wonderful time of the show where we crunch some numbers with Matt.
That's right.
So hold those up for the viewers at home.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Can you read them? Right there.
You have your electron microscopes handy.
So okay. Simmer down there, big fella. All right. What do we got here? Well, we get a couple weeks of numbers here, which is great. And I also have February's production numbers. So I'll start with February, actually. We had an average sale price of about $115,000. And that's great. I know it sounds crazy, but as that, which is down from $120,000. And seeing that price goes down is usually a strong indicator of market growth. Now, because that means that all homes are selling right across the gamut, low, high, everything in the middle. When that number gets really, really high, the market tends to kind of like plateau, shut off. And when that number gets really, really low, it kind of goes into complete frenzy for a little bit, and then there's still a significant chunk of that market that's kind of not in it. So it's nice to see something right in the center there. It kind of represents a full range of access to buyers. We only had 15 closed transactions in Alapalachee County and Eastern Jasper for February, which is down up a little bit from February from 13. Our pendings were pretty low actually at 15, which are down for 28. So we're going to start seeing a lot of transactions cycle through here. I'm already seeing them now for the month of March, and when we get to the end of March, I think we're going to see quite the increase. Total new listings for February was pretty low at only 10, and our active days on market for those were 97. So that's actually a really low number for active days on market for 10 new listings. But the last couple of weeks have been really interesting. We actually had a total of 4 transactions close in the last 2 weeks. That's it. Not very many. Pretty small. Our pendings, on the other hand, we've actually had 8 pendings come through, so it's nice to see a bit of a growth in that direction. And our new listings as well are up dramatically, and so we're going to start to watch them steadily climb. Just 3 weeks ago, we had 2 new listings in that week, and it was our lowest week of the year so far. And now we're at 10 and 13, so we're going to be climbing significantly as time goes by, and people are starting to cycle through and get their stuff put on the market, and I'm glad they've been doing it because the inventory's been really low, and that'll be really helpful. And speaking of inventory, right now we're actually at our still not our all-time high yet for the year, believe it or not, but it's getting there. Our all-time high was 110 so far for 2019, and that was the first week of January, so that was as probably like a lot of those older listings were cycling out, so the inventory was still up there. Right now we're at 109, which is up from last week at 106. For all of Apache County and Eastern Jasper, and the average days on market right now is at 217 days. That has dropped consistently for the past 6 weeks. So we have a declining amount of time on market for our current inventory. So new inventory needs to get on there soon, and they should be able to take advantage of this, you know, kind of market trend as we progress into quickly into that selling season. So the percentage of list price right now has actually been pretty high too for this time of year. As I've been looking, I've actually seen several sales come in and around list price, and that's unusual for early March. Really unusual. Not that unusual for April. It's not anomalous in April. It does happen, but we usually don't start to see, you know, regularly get around that 98 to 99 percentile sale price of list until we end up in really July. And so generally speaking for most of the market. So it's nice to see an indicator here or there of some real activity in that way. So yeah, no, I'd say if you don't have your place listed, you're getting ready for it, get your agent on the line, make sure you're getting ready for it, because there's buyers out there and they're rocking and rolling.
All right, and you'll see a complete list of these numbers on our website at myiowainfo.com, along with a archived version of this program. And of course, you can also see it on Matt's Facebook presence, right?
Yeah, it's on our Remax Partners Realty Facebook page.
All right, and that'll do it for this edition of Right at Home, brought home to you by University of Iowa Community Credit Union, your community, your credit union. For Matt Cargelotti, I'm Tim Dill for 1410 KGRN.
Connect to this radio station.